Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Great to see you again, and welcome back to Your Money and a Cup of Joe. I'm your host and moderator, Ryan Ruff, and as always, I'll be joined by Joe Kaleo, my right-hand man from the Kaleo Wealth Management Group. We're going to be diving into yet another wealth management discussion, as we typically do on the show, and today, we're going to be focusing our attention towards retirement planning as a whole. We're going to be providing an update, really, on what's new this year with regard to the retirement planning landscape as a whole, including we're going to look into a few of the Secure 2.0 Act's provisions that became effective this year, and as well as some Social Security and Medicare updates. Ultimately, we want to help prepare you, for potentially higher income taxes if Congress does not end up extending the 2017 tax cuts and the Jobs Act tax breaks that were incorporated with those, they're supposed to expire here coming up in 2026. So we're going to be reviewing some key strategies with, a holistic approach into the retirement planning process and where we stand today. And we've got a lot of provisions that we want to jump into today. But first, let's go ahead and welcome Joe aboard. Joe, good to see you today. How you doing?
Ryan, doing great. Good to see you. And Ryan, as we always talk about, it's not only important what you make, but what you keep, especially after taxes. So very important topic today.
Of course. Amen. And Joe, we've seen a lot of interest rate hikes throughout our prior year in 2023. Let's start off there. How have you seen, this impact retirees, and have they gotten any sort of help, if you will, or in the form of increases when it comes to maybe Social Security payments, anything like this?
Yes, actually, there's a benefit, right? Everybody thinks rising interest rates are not a good thing, but Medicare and Social Security are seeing a benefit, right? 2024 Medicare Part B premium increase 6%. So the standard monthly premium for Part B is increasing. Now, it may not be a lot for some people, but it is increasing from $164.90 per person in 2023 to $174.70 per person in 2024. So it's not a huge increase, but it is an increase, right? And the 2024 cost of living adjustment was 3.2%. So we're seeing things increase, some of them for the benefit and not as much as people thought they would, but at least there's a cost of living adjustment. They didn't always have that. Most years they have, but it did increase. Now, on the flip side, Ryan, the things that the Federal Reserve and the government looks at is the consumer price index, and especially the consumer price index for the elderly, right? As well as the urban wage workers. One of the things that has gone up tremendously, especially in relative importance, is the housing costs. Housing costs for these two areas have gone up quite a bit, and we've seen that increase for a while. We saw it during COVID. We continue to see that be an issue. And so housing has been a higher than normal sector, if you will, of expenditures, and it is a concern. So it is being moderated or monitored. And that's why the Federal Reserve has wanted to see core inflation come down before they turn off rising interest rates. This is an area that they're watching diligently. So with all this in mind, when you think about it, don't assume that this year's COLA will give you the net boost to your spending power. It is particularly important, though, that your Medicare Part B premiums are directly withheld from your Social Security payments. That is an increased deduction for Part B premiums. That means the 3.2% COLA most likely won't result in an equal increase in your net benefit, especially if you're subject to income-related surcharges for Part B. So, it's just something to keep in mind, ultimately.
Of course, of course. Well, let's pivot our focus now to one of the table stakes, if you will, and that's the Secure Act, Secure 2.0 Act. We have had a prior discussion on this podcast kind of outlining what we thought some provisions might look like and how this could impact some folks. But now that we are going to be knee deep in it, why don't we take a look at it? Why don't you set the scene first and foremost? Let's talk about the act as a whole and ultimately how it's going to be changing things.
I think one of the things that the government tried to do was give people more time to take money out of their 401ks and IRAs. Those are RMDs. We'll go into that in more detail in a second. But they've also allowed people opportunities to get into their 401k account in smaller dollar amounts with more opportunity. We're not going to cover that in this session, Ryan. So what I do want to cover, though, is RMDs, because it is a question we're getting a lot of right now. RMDs, required minimum distributions. So if you've put money into a 401k in pre-tax dollars, right, the government says at some point you either have to take it out of that 401k or 403b or IRA at a later date. What is that date? For years, it was 70 and a half. Then they bumped it with Secure 1.0 to age 72. Now they've bumped it again to age 73. So if you turn 73 in 2024 or later, you don't have to start taking your RMDs until you reach age 73. If you reach 73 in 2033 or later, then you're not subject to RMDs until age 75. Sound a little confusing? Let me describe it like this. If you're born in 1959 or earlier, your RMD begins at 73. If you're born in 1960 or sooner, more recently, your RMD begins at age 75. Here's another caveat though, Ryan. In the past, there are no RMDs for Roth IRAs, but there was an RMD for Roth 401ks. The government has done away with that. So if you have Roth dollars, Roth 401k or Roth IRAs, no RMD for you.
Good to know. Good to know. Well, let's stay on the RMD point here. I would imagine this is a pretty big question that you get asked, Joe, and that is, do you have to take your RMD, or is there maybe another option that's worth considering for folks out there?
There is another option, Ryan. Glad you brought that up, right? Can you give money, or you can give money to a charity instead of taking the RMD? In some cases, people that had charitable donations or charitable contributions might take it from their IRA or their 401k, get taxed on it, and then turn give it to the charity. Well, charitable or qualified charitable distributions give you and your spouse that opportunity to transfer some of your retirement assets directly to qualified charities without incurring that income tax. So it's simultaneously offsetting all or a portion of your RMD that you wouldn't necessarily need to take. So that's thanks to Secure 2.0. In 2024, the annual QCD, qualified charitable distribution limit, has increased to $105,000 a year. And it was $100,000 in 2023. So there is a bump up. Now, Secure 2.0 also expanded the IRA charitable distributions to allow a one-time election to transfer assets via a QCD to a charitable gift annuity, a CGA, or a charitable remainder unit trust, a CRUT, or finally, a charitable remainder annuity trust, a CRAT. This one-time election for QCDs to split interest entity is limited to $53,000 per person. So it gets a little technical here, I know. If it's confusing, give us a call. We can always walk you through it. But there are options here that people didn't necessarily have or know of before.
Mm-hmm. Good to know, especially, you know, the charitably inclined folks. You know, they've got an option there to look that way. Let's pivot now to a big financial concern that a lot of folks face when it comes to, you know, education and putting their kids through college. Obviously, we know 529s, they're meant to help families save for college. But with regard to retirement planning, if all that money is not used, that's sitting in that 529 or once sat in that 529, what options are there? Can they funnel that towards their retirement? How does that work, Joe?
They can. So let's go back to the 529 first, just for college, right? One of the discussions that we have is parents saved, did a good job saving, growing, and then judiciously using that account for kids' college, but then had leftovers, right? What can I do with the leftovers? Personally, I like leftovers. You know, a cold meatloaf sandwich might be nice right about now, but that's besides the point. But then when you take that 529, do you want to leave it then for grandchildren or great-grandchildren? You can. But beginning this year, you've got another option, right? You could also have taken it out if you want. That's still a second option. But the third is the owner of a 529 account that's been open for more than 15 years can transfer up to $35,000. That's a lifetime limit per beneficiary from that account to a Roth IRA for the 529's beneficiary, not the account owner's Roth IRA. So the provision makes it more beneficial to start saving for college earlier, right? The sooner you open the 529, the sooner you're going to meet the 15-year requirement. It's important to note, though, Ryan, that amounts contributed to the 529 in the last 5 years and their earnings are not eligible to be rolled over. So it's important to keep that in mind. Might need to take a different investment tact with that. So additionally, the beneficiary must have earned income that year, and the rollovers will be subject to Roth IRA annual contribution limits. Now I'm going to get a little technical again. This means you can only roll over an amount up to that year's contribution limit, less any other IRA contributions you make that year. However, unlike other regular Roth IRA contributions, eligibility to complete that rollover won't be impacted by the beneficiary's income level. Remember, there are certain income levels. This is considered a rollover, not a direct contribution. So given these limitations, we don't suggest deliberately overfunding your 529 to just try to take advantage of the provision. However, at least families now have another option to help some of their leftover 529 assets from being taxed or penalized upon distribution.
No, this is great information, Joe. I appreciate you sharing that for us. Let's turn now to a conversation that I feel like you and I have a lot on this show surrounding the idea of estate planning. Obviously, as we've said on this show, it's very important for folks to revisit their estate plan, make sure that goals and aspirations and, of course, strategies are still up to snuff with the times and their, you know, their interests at heart. But let's talk about it now in terms of the times. As we roll here now in 2024, why would you say it's important for somebody to be revisiting that estate plan specifically right now?
Yeah, well, the window for estate planning may be closing or changing, certainly. If it doesn't close and the numbers are likely to change, Congress loves to play with this number. You know, they left it alone for decades, Ryan, and now all of a sudden it seems like it comes up for renewal every 5 to 10 years, at least in discussions. What's the number? What numbers are we talking about? Well, that's the lifetime gift and estate tax exemption amounts that they allow per an individual under current laws. So as it is currently in 2024, it's $13.61 million per person or $27 million per couple. That number, though, is going to drop in 2026 back to almost half, $6.56 million per person, $13.12 million per couple. So you can see the numbers going to change, right? So you think, okay, I've got time. Yes, you do. But we strongly recommend against waiting until 2025 to begin that conversation. Ryan, I often see, and we've seen this with clients, it takes weeks or even months to implement a thoughtful estate plan. Why? Because the last time you put that plan in place, your life was in a different position. Your working career was in a different position. Your family was likely in a different position, right? The dollar amounts, what people were doing, what their needs were, all of it. So the cost of procrastinating of that conversation can be very steep. And you want to make sure that you begin the discussion with your financial advisor, with your estate planning, your tax accountant, with all those folks early enough that you're revisiting your plan and you consider some of the following questions. When was the last plan your estate plan was revisited or reviewed, at least? Has anything changed that would require an update to the plan? Do you know the tax implications of your current estate plan now and if the law sunsets? Remember that second, right? That second opinion, that's where we're going, right? Ultimately, are all the beneficiary designations current? And do you know where your current estate documents are located? And does somebody have a backup set? All of that becomes important, Ryan. And there are even some clients that we have today that we say, we think you should be revisiting your estate plan each year for the next so-and-so years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it may be, because they have some unique circumstances. If they're having to do it that often, it doesn't hurt for you to pull it out and make sure it's up to date.
Joe, I love that. I appreciate it. I want to switch gears now and talk specifically about employers. We have talked in the past about employers having that relationship towards their employees and their ultimate retirement plan. So is there anything, given the change here moving into 2024, that employers could be doing to help their employees contribute to their retirement plans? And I'll throw a little caveat and curveball at you. And let's say even if those employees, let's say, still have student debt, which many do, you know, many in the younger side of the workforce these days do bring that debt into the equation. So talk to me a little bit about this. Any employees have the ability to help employers with their retirement plans?
Yes, I think, Ryan, this comes about because there was one company that had heard from their employees that, hey, I can't afford to put into my retirement account. I have to pay down my student loans. And so they went and made an appeal to the IRS and said, we're going to contribute to the employer retirement plan if the employee pays down their student loan up to a certain dollar amount. Sure enough, the IRS allowed that to pass. Well, the government saw how that worked. They liked the idea. And now employers have the ability to adopt an employee match based upon their paying down their student debt. So that is also new in 2024, and employers can begin to look at, hey, do I want to adopt this? What's the benefit for me? And am I helping my employees? So that's also new in Secure 2.0.
Alrighty, fantastic. Thanks for that clarification, Joe. So as we're kind of bringing our conversation to a head here today, Joe, obviously a lot of these Secure 2.0 acts, changes, and factors that are coming into play are going to make some, you know, slight alterations, if you will, to your retirement planning efforts. If you were to bottom line it for our audience on a few key reminders, what would those be? And you know, what would be some best actions to move forward?
Yep. So let's go through the reminders, right? The checklist, if you will, Ryan. If you're turning 73 this year and you have to start taking RMDs, what does that look like? Can you take, do you want to take that distribution? If not, second point, the QCD, the qualified charitable distribution, is that part of your strategy? Are you giving to charities today? Do you want to take it straight from your IRA and avoid the taxation from the IRA? We talked about 529s and overfunding or starting contributions very early, at least 15 years out. There are various options now and beneficial ones for over contribution or that leftover account. So we have to see, can that be beneficial, right? Reach out to see if your employer has any provisions in their retirement plan to allow a matching on any kind of contribution if you have a student loan. Also, there could be a potential for employers to have matching contributions on a Roth basis. So that's also new for plans coming up in the near future. We do recommend you revisit your estate plan to make sure it's up to date, not only for today, but in the near future. If the estate tax exemption is not lifted back up to its current rate, there's a drop-off coming, cliff ahead, watch out, right? Coming up in 2026. We also suggested and discussed Social Security. Talking about Social Security, when to make your claim, does it boost your savings, Medicare Part B, all of that is part of the change and the cost of living adjustments, Ryan, not going up as much as Medicare Part B premiums are increasing. So the net result could be a negative for some folks. So those are some of the things that we're starting to see in 2024, as well as in Secure Act 2.0.
Fantastic, Joe. And look, we've thrown a lot at our audience. It's a lot to stay up to date on these, you know, tax code changes and how Secure Act 2.0 or even maybe future Secure Acts will impact somebody's retirement planning. So, Joe, for anybody out there that would benefit from just, you know, leaning on the, you know, the person in their corner, their wealth manager, somebody like yourself to talk them through what these provision changes mean for them and their retirement plan, what is the best way somebody could get a hold of you and your team to just open up that dialogue?
I would say give us a call or shoot us an email. We're happy to set up a time, do a second opinion on what they're thinking or what they're doing, maybe even do a financial analysis of their situation. But begin with a conversation with us and let's just see what they're thinking and doing.
Fantastic. Well, Joe, I appreciate you carving some time out of your busy schedule to jump on today and looking forward to being back on the next one with you.
Ryan, thanks. Good to see you. Look forward to the next chat.
Absolutely, Joe. Cheers to you. And hey, folks, we'll take one final moment before we say goodbye and thank you all for carving some time out of your schedule to be with us on the show today. If you did take something away from today's discussion surrounding retirement planning and the changes that have kind of been coming our way here in 2024, and you benefited from today? Well, make sure you hit that subscribe button on whichever platform you checked us out on so you don't miss out on great conversations like these where Joe and I unpack some of the wealth management and financial advising topics and strategies that, you know, he and his team are working on at the Kaleo Wealth Management Group so that you and yours come out better for it on the other side. Before Joe, I'm Ryan. We're going to go ahead and say so long today, but we appreciate you stopping by and being with us on Your Money, a Cup of Joe. This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Financial Services Incorporated. UBS Financial Services Incorporated does not verify and does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of the information presented. This material is made available for use by CEG. Neither UBS Financial Services Incorporated nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review the PDF document at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, member SIPC. Joe Kaleo at Kaleo Wealth Management Group, UBS Financial Services Incorporated. Office address 200 West Highway 6, Suite 400 in Waco, Texas, 76712.